Okay. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm going to try to offend you all today. So, that's a good start. You're already offended, right? I need a couple volunteers for this. Come on up. One more. Who else? There you go. They're afraid to be offended. So all you're gonna do is give one of those to everyone. Yeah. Well, I'm getting set up here. No jabbing. Just gently give one to. I really wanted to, I'm working on the camp t-shirt right now. It's a really cool design. One of our ladies from the Las Vegas church drew it herself, so it's going to be really cool. I wanted the image on the shirt to be blue, and it didn't work out that way. It ended up being red. And I talked about it, and I was like, well, what if I put it on a brown shirt? And Isabel had told me, no, brown, that's like a poop shirt. So, and I was like, but brown's cool. I like brown. What's going on? So I'm going to give you, and if you'll notice, I'm wearing brown today. So I hope this doesn't offend you, but I'm going to do the sermon today in a poop shirt. And you should all be getting an object that I asked them to pass out. I'm also risking offending you. I really second-guess myself in showing this video, but I think I'm going to do it anyway. So I'm asking for a lot of forgiveness. Hope I can get set up in time here. You know what? That's not going to happen. It didn't get it on there, so oh well. It wasn't meant to be. It didn't download to the right file, so that's cool. What I was going to show you was a clip of Will Ferrell, and he was being really offended by something that happened in the media. There was a he heard some news about Kristen Stewart breaking up with the Twilight guy, or I can't remember his name right now. But anyway, he got really offended because of it. It was kind of funny, but it was an example of how people can be overly offended. Mr. and Mrs. Brown had two sons. One was named Mind Your Own Business, and the other was named Trouble. One day after dinner, the two boys decided to go outside and play hide-and-seek. And while they were playing hide-and-seek, Trouble was the one hiding. And Mind Your Own Business was counting to 100. And he began looking for his brother behind garbage cans and bushes. Then he started looking in and under cars until a policeman was watching him and took notice of him, and he asked him, after he approached him, what are you doing? And he said, I'm playing a game. Then the officer asked him, what is your name? And he said, mind your own business. And the policeman was starting to get very angry and decided to give the boy one more chance. He asked, why did you say that? And the boy replied, because you asked me what my name was, and I'm looking for trouble. It's easy to take offense to someone as being disrespectful. When children are disrespectful, we want to act quickly and alter their behavior so that they can learn how to treat other people. And there seems to be a common strategy in place to make sure that they know how to be selfless and thoughtful of others. It can take a long time for a child to learn that they're not the center of the universe. I just learned that last week. One thing that speeds this process up is having younger siblings. The world of a child drastically changes when there's such a drastic change in focus of a family. What was once all yours as the child now becomes share with your brother. Give it to your sister. The closer we are to someone, the easier it is to be offended by their actions. See, I just learned that last week because I don't have any younger siblings, so it took me a lot longer. But this happens all the time. Have you ever had a friend that became a roommate? You could have been best friends, you hung out all the time, always spending time in each other's houses. But as soon as you take ownership and occupy the same space, the little offenses, the little things that you could just let go, that you once overlooked, they begin to test your friendship. They might be missing their rent payments. They're keeping you up at night. They don't clean up after themselves. These are all roommate problems that I had, so. What was once minor offenses to you suddenly becomes a daily life experience. Today we're going to talk about that offense. And this will be kind of a two-part sermon. Can you guess what the second part will be? If there's offense, there's also defense. And I've been trying to challenge myself and expand into deeper topics by covering them in a series. And it's been really challenging. It hasn't really gone that well. When I get to the second part, it's just like, what's left to say, you know? So, I think this one will be good next time. No, I don't know. We'll see how it goes this time. You've probably heard the old saying, the best defense is a good what? Now, there's another saying that's different than that that I'll mention next time. But this is the best defense is a good offense. So, is offense better, though? Or should we always be playing defense? I would say that the main problems with being on the offensive is control. If you have the ball in your court, you get really comfortable. You control the ball. You develop certain expectations for how other people are going to react to you. Humility is sometimes lost. And your objective is to score points with the use of your offensive strategies. If it's football, you're either offense or defense. So if you're offense, that's all you do. That's all you know. Right? Not a lot of players do both in that sport. So being on the offense, you're always in control. And the one thing you don't want to do when you're on offense is lose control. And that's a problem with God. Because God wants us to know that we're not in control. And when we try to take control, we lose God. But maybe you have a timid personality, right? Maybe you can say, pass the ball to your teammates and still be on the offense. Right? Maybe you're afraid of offending other people with your offense. Either way you're doing it, you're putting yourself in the prison of offense. I'm really looking forward to camp this year. I mentioned the shirt. But we're talking about, at camp with the kids, we're going to be talking about conviction of the heart. And we're comparing it to being convicted by sin and the prison that we're in because of it. The prison of sin is no laughing matter, and it affects everyone at every age. When we are so easily offended, and we're worried about offending others all the time, we're putting pieces of offense up around us. And if it goes unchecked, and you don't have a strategy to deal with the offense, that fence boxes you in, and it becomes your eternal prison. I had Aaron and Christy, thanks for helping me out there. Everyone was passed out an offense. I told you I was going to offend everybody. And you all have an offense for me today. So the question is, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to build a fence with it and box yourself in and live in the prison? Or is there something else we can do with it? Proverbs 18:19 says, "A brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city. And their contentions are like the bars of a castle." You cannot break through. It's a fortified castle. If you choose to be offended, you're doing it to protect yourself. You have a castle, but you're also fencing yourself in. How many of you believe that you have the right to be offended by what other people do? Give me a show of hands. How many of you believe that you have the right to be offended? Some people telling the truth here. That's good. Okay, let me ask another question. How many believe that you do not have the right to offend others? Raise your hand if you believe that you do not have the right to offend others. Right, but is it your right? You have the right to do it. But then it comes, right? Then you are going to be offended. You can expect it at that point. And I think that's a good point, because if we expect it, it doesn't offend us as much. And I phrase those questions particularly because if you look at it from both directions, it seems like the answer changes. It's basically the same question that I asked. Yeah. But it's almost like you want to give a different answer. Why does it change when the spiritual nature of God comes into play? I could ask a third question. I didn't write this down, but in reading and studying for the sermon, I saw a verse in there. Does God have the right to offend us? It's kind of what he does, isn't it? It says it's going to happen. He's going to come and he's going to offend all of us. He comes to make war with us. So that's one way of looking at it. But let's see if we can clear up the water here. No one wants to offend anyone else, right? It's not something we want to do. I especially am terrified of saying something that will hurt someone else or that will be misinterpreted as an offense. I was afraid to play that video. Just one example, but it happens all the time. There's no avoiding it. We're going to spend some time now in Matthew chapter 15. If you can turn there. Be prepared for that. In the Bible, they could really get offended by some silly things. Only in the Bible, though. None of us here get offended by those silly things. Our problems are so much bigger and more justified. Anyway, Matthew 15, starting with verse 1. Then came to Jesus scribes and Pharisees, which were of Jerusalem, saying, "Why do thy disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? For they wash not their hands when they eat bread." But he answered and said unto them, "Why do you also transgress the commandment of God by your tradition?" So you can see the issue here already. The Pharisees were getting massively offended by the disciples because they didn't wash their hands. I mean, that's common decency, right? You got to wash your hands before you partake and eat. That's wisdom, you know? Why would you not want to do that? But to get offended, you have the right to be offended because somebody else doesn't do that. Verse 4, "For God commanded, saying, honor thy father and mother, and he that curseth father or mother, let him die the death. But ye say, whatsoever shall say to whosoever shall say to his father or his mother, it is a gift by whosoever thou might be profited by me. And honor not his father or his mother, he shall be free. Thus have ye made the commandment of God of none effect by your tradition. Ye hypocrites. Well did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying, the people draweth nigh unto me with their mouth, and honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. But in vain they do worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. And he called the multitude and said unto them, hear and understand, not that which goeth into the mouth defileth a man, but that which cometh out of the mouth, this defileth a man. We get so concerned with the little things. We have lots of. I was a little sarcastic earlier. I said we're not concerned with the silly things, right? We are. Right? We look at the Pharisees and then we think, oh, how could they do that? They just weren't washing their hands, you know. But we have lots of traditions that we keep. We got birthdays. We got holidays, we got socially accepted events, foods we eat, clothes we wear, common greeting practices that can offend us, right? Wearing shoes at church, or not wearing shoes at church, what type of shoes we wear at church, type of music and instruments we can play at church, church in the morning, church in the afternoon, should we have evening services, what language you want to sing in, quiet times, early to bed, early to rise, choice of schools, Christian career paths, family commitments. It goes on and on and on. We have established what acceptable living as Christians is through the application of our external worldview. And not a single one of these things, not a single one of these traditions are biblically mandated. They're just something that we are around, that we live in, and we decide, oh, this is good, this is bad. And it's our worldview that shapes what offends us. And it's wrong. Should we be offended at all? Every single one of these things could be and probably has been an offense to all of us on a regular basis. People, especially Christians, are easily offended. This is in part because we have high expectations, right? We have high standards. We have the law that we can point to. We have the expectation of morality from handed down from the Father. Even though we ignore it and we misinterpret it and we take it out of context and we distort it. Didn't the Pharisees strive to keep the law? Don't we have the laws today that we put ahead of following God? They were washing their hands before they ate. Our law books, they fill entire libraries. And they're so convoluted that we need to make new laws to interpret the laws that we have. Anybody vote on the propositions in the primaries last week or a couple weeks ago? Did you read them and you go through and figure out what they're all about? It's pretty hard to figure out what's going on. It's so deceiving. Should I vote no one on Prop 81 or 79 or whatever it was? Or should I vote yes? If I vote no, it's like voting yes, though. So how do I know? The devil makes war with these little laws. Those little offenses that I gave you to, those little pieces of wood, those little splinters that are in your hand right now. It's no big deal, right? I can absorb that. I can take my offense and I can ignore it. But the devil gives us one at a time until we have hundreds of splinters, hundreds of thorns in our flesh. And all these splinters, if we don't deal with them, they become a log that gets stuck in our eye. And we become blind. They blind us, and we try to hold other people to the standard that we can't live up to ourselves. We forget about grace. We forget about the free gift. And we only remember the splinter that is currently jabbing us in the here and now. Maybe I should have let you jab everybody, Aaron. You really get it. In Matthew 5, Jesus gives us the way out. Go to Matthew 5, starting with verse 20. Matthew 5:20 says, "For I say unto you, that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. Ye have heard that it was said of them of old time, that thou shalt not kill, and whatsoever thou shalt kill, whosoever that thou shalt kill shall be in danger of judgment. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of the hellfire." Who knows what raka means? It just sounds bad, right? I don't even know what it means. It sounds bad. You better not call me raka. Actually, I think when I looked it up, it can mean foolish. There was kind of an alternate explanation for it where it's where you're calling somebody worthless. You're worthless. You have no value to me. It's just like the worst insult that you can put upon someone. Whoever shall say to his brother, Raka, you're worthless. You're no good. You don't have any value. It's harsh words. But what are we talking about? We're talking about being offended. Right? If somebody calls you worthless, do you have the right to be offended about that? Does it do any good? Maybe we should work on being unoffendable. Is that possible? Is there a way that you can be unoffendable? Is there anybody that could be unoffendable. Going down to 25, it says, agree with thy adversary quickly. Whilst they are in the way with them, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and thou shalt be cast into prison. He tells us to make peace. Don't fight back. Don't make unnecessary war. Don't make the little offense that you're holding into a big offense. Into your prison. Going down to 46, still in Matthew chapter 5, for if ye love them which love you, what reward have you? Do not even the publicans do the same? And if ye salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? The publicans do the same. But ye therefore, be therefore perfect, even as your Father, which is in heaven, is perfect. It's not easy. It's not easy to have enemies, to have adversaries, to have people that challenge you and show them the same love, show them, give them the salute. But what it's saying is we are no better than the sinner, the publican, the Samaritan, whatever bad name that we can put on people that don't identify themselves with God. We can't identify ourselves with God. If we're not showing love to the sinner. If we're only accepting the people that we think are righteous. As much as the flesh makes it seem foolish to go along with the very person that disagrees with you. You know, you get into a fight with somebody, they disagree with you, so you just want to cut off that relationship. Like, we don't believe the same thing. I mean, how many churches go through that where they don't believe the same thing? So the church is split, and they have basically all the same doctrine, but they can't agree with each other. So is that what the Bible's telling them to do? No. It's telling them to love their brother, accept their brother, work with their brother, make peace with their brother. We don't have to believe like them, but by agreeing with them, we are showing the same love that everyone is offered through Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. Jesus doesn't believe like we do at first, but his method is proven. He accepts us and agrees with us as long as we have a convicted heart. He looks at our heart. This is the roadmap. In our weaknesses, we grow stronger, and soon we believe like Jesus. We start to believe like him. Love keeps no record of wrong. This is the most powerful tool that we have. If a person can love while the enemy is continually offending, you are doing something right. This was commanded in Luke 17, and Jesus says to take heed to yourself. Watch yourself, he says. If your brother offends you, yes, rebuke him, but also forgive him. And if he offends you seven times in a day, well then seven times in a day, you forgive him. Can you imagine being unoffendable enough to where in the same day, someone could offend you, doing the same thing to you seven times? That's foolishness, right? We're fools if we allow that to happen, right? Because we're letting them get over on us. Why does it say that? Because there's something so powerful there that it can't be defeated. Jesus cannot be defeated. He died for us. He accepts us continually. While we're offending Him over and over again. And He agrees with us. He takes us for what we are. Because He knows that if He shows that kind of love, it changes hearts. He can be unoffendable. Because He wants us to change our hearts. And we draw a line. We draw many lines. And we say, well, I only have to go this far. I only have to let somebody get over on me so many times. And then I can draw a line. But Jesus looks at the heart. And as many times as you offend Him, if you want to seek Him, He's waiting for you. What does the Bible say about, like, if we're too busy, though, right? What about our family who we have to take care of? How can we pay attention to these publicans when we got these commitments that we have to take care of? We still have to work and make money. We have all sorts of commitments that we can't be expected to make time for everyone and show that kind of love, that unoffendable love. We have to learn to stop and pray and know that we will be provided for and that it's not by our might, not by our power, not by our spirit, but by the Spirit of Jesus Christ. Then we will know that when to act by recognizing that our lives are not our own, but they're given to Jesus, transformed into a new creation. A servant still living in the flesh, but controlled by the power of the Spirit. Jesus had the same problem in flesh. He ran out of time. He didn't have enough time. He was tired. His disciples were tired. Turn to Matthew 15. We're going to read a quick story about this. This is an awesome story. Matthew 15, 21 through 28. Then Jesus went thence and departed into the coast of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came out to the same coast and cried unto Him, saying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, thou Son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with the devil." But He answered her not a word. And His disciples came and besought Him, saying, "Send her away, for she crieth after us." Right? And thank you, Adrian, for doing such a good job reading this passage. It's coming up right here. I just read some backstory to it. But Jesus just left the multitudes where He was healing. Him and His disciples were ministering to these throngs of people. They were coming at them, and they go to the coast, and they go into a house, and what are they doing there? What are they trying to do? They're trying to get a break. They're trying to get some rest. They're trying to get away from these throngs of people. And Jesus also has this task of, He has these 12 men that He has to deal with. And they have all these questions for Him. And He's teaching these 12 men everything that He knows. And He's trying to impart all of His knowledge in a limited amount of time onto these men. And these men are complaining. And they're saying, "I'm tired. I'm hungry. I have all these physical needs. How can you just ignore these things? Why is this spiritual stuff more important to you?" And so we get into this passage and we read it, and it's like this woman is coming. She has this horrible problem. Her daughter is possessed by a demon. And what does Jesus do? He doesn't say anything. That sounds awful, right? He answered her not a word. And she kept coming. She kept trying. She was unoffended by Jesus not saying a word. She couldn't be offended. She got the attention of the disciples, and they came to Jesus and said, "You need to take care of this. You need to send her away, because she's just causing problems. We're trying to sleep over here. Can't you just do what you need to do?" Then it comes out. Then the story comes together. He says, "But he answered and said, 'I am not sent but into the lost sheep of the house of Israel.'" Then came she and worshipped, saying, "Lord, help me though." She didn't get it. She said, I'm here for my disciples. I can't help you because I'm busy doing this other stuff. I'm busy training these 12 men. They're going to change the world and bring the gospel. This is bigger than what you got going on. I'm sorry." But this woman was smart. This was a good test. Jesus was testing her. She came and worshipped him and said, "Lord, help me." And he answered again to her. He said, "It is not meet to take the children's bread and cast it to the dogs." He gives her this mini parable. Just like if you're eating at the dinner table, and isn't it common that you wouldn't just take the dinner that you would give to the children, throw it down off the table onto the ground and let the dog eat it, right? That's not what's supposed to happen. You're not supposed to do that. That food is for the children. Another insult coming in the way of this woman. If I was this woman, right, I'd be like, "Are you calling me a dog? Are you saying I'm not worthy to eat of this same food that you're giving to your disciples here in this place?" She didn't take it that way, though. She didn't take offense to it. She understood that it was a mini parable, and then he was making an analogy that I'm busy with this. How can I take time to step away to focus on you and help you? Because you probably want me to come back to your house. You want me to go and heal and do an exorcism on your daughter, right? But I can't leave this place. We're stuck here. I'm ministering to my disciples right now." And she said, "True, Lord. It's very true that you're busy. But even the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from the master's table." In effect, she was saying, "Look, you don't got to come to my house. You don't got to lift me up the way that you're lifting up the disciples. But you are Jesus, the all-powerful Creator God, and I know you have the power to heal my child. And if you can just do this one thing, I will love you forever." And Jesus answered and said unto her, "O woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt." And her daughter was made whole that very hour. See, he didn't have to go back to her house. In that same moment, in that same hour, Jesus healed her because she could not be offended by him. Because her heart was actively seeking him. If only we could find an example of someone who had every right to be offended. If only we could find someone who had every right to hold it against us. Someone that would stand at a distance from us by right, because we offended him. He had every right to be offended. But instead, he opened his arms wide open. He doesn't count the wrongs that we have done. His name is Jesus. He has every right. We don't have a right to be offended. He welcomes us back. He gives us the right to be the children of God. We didn't earn it. We're still not earning it. It was a free gift from the foundation of the world. Now is the time for you to deal with your offenses. It is time to just drop them. When someone gives you another one in the moment, drop that one even quicker. You're going to get better at it. Because today, Jesus wants to release some people. Release you from some offenses that have been given to you. These things have been keeping up at a distance and have been keeping us divided. But by the power of the cross of Jesus Christ, we can finally be free from the fences, from the fence that we have built all the way around ourselves. Right? We build these fences to protect ourselves. If God can drop the charges against you, what offense in the universe are you going to hold on to? That your debt is greater. You see, an offense is an event. It's something that happens to you. But to be offended, that's a decision that you make. To live offended as a believer in Jesus and to stay that way denies the very nature of the salvation that you claim to have received. We need to release these offenses. We need to ask God if there's something we need to drop. Drop those splinters. And if you want to do that, those offenses that I gave you today, you can come up to the altar and you can put them down up here. You can lay them down in the front. You can do that if you want. Or you can hold on to them. You can think about them all week. You can count how many more offenses get added on to that one throughout the week. Or you can finally say, I'm going to drop them. I'm going to start dropping them. I'm not going to let these little things build up. I'm not going to let my pride get in the way of God doing better work in me. Because we lost our rights when we sinned. Jesus never sinned. But he still paid the cost. And he has a right to be offended. Dropping the splinters and the conviction of your heart is the only way to be free of the bars that keep you prisoner. Keep us prisoners. Lord, make us humble as the little children we once were, fully trusting, full of faith, unoffendable, released from the burden that is placed on your shoulders. Give us clean hands. And Lord, may you be the only one that we're worried about offending. God bless you.